Thank you. This is the June 11th meeting of the National Finance Committee. We are starting our session at 8:33 p.m. Eastern. Mr. Secretary, would you take the roll?
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. You just called on me, right? I picked up the phone, and it appears to have done something. All right. Are we ready for roll call?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Please answer up when you hear your name. Paul DiRienzo. Lyndon Foley.
Here.
Kamau Harris.
Present.
Christina Huggins.
Present.
R. Paul Martin here. Stephen Meeks. Darlene Pagano.
Here.
Myla Reason. Minerva Sanders.
Present.
Susan Young.
Present, and I'll call Myla.
Okay. We need to see who else is here.
Oh, okay.
Is the executive director here?
Yes, here.
Okay. Are there any directors who are not members who are present at this time?
Yes, Donna Carter.
Donna Carter. Anybody else?
Yeah, Jim Dingman.
Okay, Jim Dingman.
This is Myla. Did you get me or Paul?
Okay, you are here. Let me mark you as here. Are there any? I have Carter and Dingman. Is there anybody else who's a director who's here?
Serena's here.
I did another.
Okay, I have Serene Roberts is here. Any other directors?
Okay.
And I believe there's a guest, right?
Yes, there's a guest, Bob Henley.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I think I have everybody who's here.
All right, very good.
Point of personal privilege, just before we get started, Darlene, if you don't mind. At our last meetings, we heard a lot of extraneous noise during the call, and so I would really appreciate it if people would be good enough to mute when they're not speaking so that we can actually hear the proceedings. Thank you.
All right. Point taken. I will do the readout from the executive session. Wait a minute. Yeah, even in the, I will do the readout from the meeting of May 28th. The committee went into executive session to consider financial issues, personnel, and contractual items with Executive Director Stephanie Wells regarding several stations in deficit positions and steps needed to be implemented. And now, timekeepers. There are only like 10 of us, so please step up. First,
and Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Yes, I think we only need one timekeeper for item.
Thank you, Susan. All right, so only one who will do it. It's item, the timing of the agenda.
You're breaking
I'll
up.
I'll do it. Madam Chair, I'll serve as timekeeper.
Who's serving as timekeeper?
Susan.
Susan Young. Okay.
All right. With that said, thank you very much, Susan. The agenda has only been out for about 3 or 4 hours. I hope everyone has had a chance to see it. And we are looking for agenda approval for this open portion of the meeting.
Madam Chair, would you be kind to read the agenda for the tape and the screen?
Sure. We have gone through our preliminaries, items 1 through 5. You've already heard them. 6, the agenda approval for the open portion. 5 minutes. Approve, next item 7, approve open session minutes of May 28th. 5 minutes. Number 8, the director's report. And Q&A for the open session. This will also include a report on the National Office Budget 2024, which we are expecting very soon to renew, and also how the process is going or what is needed for the National Office Budget 2025. All three of those, that's Stephanie Wells, 15 minutes. 9, update on closing the deficit budget or the budget deficit at WBAI. That's Stephanie Wells and Bob Henley. 10, give stations and LSB finance committees a timeline, an NFC timeline, for completion of their 2025 budget, so that the NFC can review of all the budgets can occur during September meetings, that's September 9th and September 23rd of 2024. Some of you may have gotten something that says 150 minutes. If you have gotten that one, please be aware I didn't, that's a typo, so 15 minutes. Number 11, we've had this up before, trying to make a schedule in front of us for the National Office Budget Review, the accounting agreement across all stations for income lines. I'll remind people that's just about income. When and how to do another central services review, and the approval process for the central services determination. How will we agree with the stations and business managers about that? Number 12, there is an explanation on the stream about having tonight's executive session. I'll read that when we get there. And 13, a motion to move to the closed portion of the meeting at a time certain of 9:50 p.m. Eastern. Do I have a motion to accept this agenda, approve this agenda?
Didn't you just do
it? This is Lyndon, and I move that we accept the agenda.
Thank you. I didn't realize that the same thing is making a motion.
I'll call for staff.
Thank you, Lyndon. And we have a motion. Do we have a second?
No, there's no second, and it's committee. Our Paul for staff.
Thank you. Someday I'm going to learn that. Okay, our Paul, there's no stack, so you're first.
Okay. Yes, again, I have to object to the fact that the way of doing this agenda is really not correct. The committee should set the agenda. So, I mean, you could have, like, a roll call before we set the agenda because we don't have a special rule about that. But, you know, the part of report out and all of that, that could go into the agenda. The committee really should have, approved the agenda before it starts getting acted out. And this preliminary stuff is really no good. Also, you have times set for these preliminaries. There's nothing that says that's anything at all. I mean, the committee sets an agenda, and then we can set what amount of time we allocate to things. So I am hoping perhaps we will, for the future, start out with approving the agenda. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment to offer.
Is Susan? Amendment to the agenda, Susan?
Yes, it's an amendment to the agenda.
Okay,
the agenda was moved, and now I'm making a motion to amend the agenda to move item number 9 up ahead of item number 8 so that we hear from Bob Henley earlier in the meeting so he can continue his journey home.
All right, that's a thoughtful item. Is there any objection to that amendment? Hearing no.
Hold on. Give me a second. So it's to move update on closing a deficit budget at WBAI, Stephanie Wells, Bob Henley, 15 minutes, to before, let me go back to that, to
eight.
Before yes. Executive Director's yes. open report.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any objection to making that change on the agenda? Hearing no objection, that's how we'll proceed. Thank you, Susan. Then we have received from ARPOL open session meetings minutes of the May 28th meeting. Are there any corrections? Is there any objection to the minutes as presented by ARPOL?
I move to approve the minutes of the May 28th meeting.
Okay, and we don't need a second, so is there any objection? Hearing no objection, those minutes are approved. We'll now jump ahead and go to what is item number 9 on the agenda, update on closing the deficit budget at WBAI, Stephanie and Bob Henley. Go ahead. Stephanie, I'm going to call on you to be the first speaker. Perhaps you could do an introduction.
Yes, I'm happy to hand it over to Bob Henley, the acting interim general manager at WPAI, and I'm happy to just ping pong back and forth with him as need be.
Great. Okay. So thank you for the opportunity.
I only said hello.
Okay,
go right ahead.
Oh, okay, thank you. So by way of introduction, I have a background in public radio. I'm fortunate enough to have been at WNYC long enough to get a pension. I have been committed and involved with Pacifica for many years. I have been fired by Pacifica twice. I always find it a development for my character. I am back now to support the station and Pacifica. I was involved with creating a program, I guess it was 3 years ago, close to 3 years ago, called Labor Monday. And this is something that Linda Perry had decided to do, and she asked me to help her. We developed a strip program from 7 a.m. across Monday through Friday. I believe somewhere around maybe at the 18-month mark, I was tired of being preempted for what I believe to be non-compliant programs where we were selling merchandise. My own history was that I had raised this issue when I was interim program director about a decade ago and was terminated when I raised that issue. So now I had the opportunity to find and use sustaining contributions, which I had done throughout my career at public radio, and subsequently I have attracted at least 3 on my program, which is entitled now Labor Monday, Labor Radio Hour with Reverend Barber and Bob Henley. At this point right now, I have 3 live reads at $6,500 each that have a 6-month term. Are we still, are we here? Are we still together?
Can I ask you? Hold a moment, Bob. I'm going to check that sound. Let's see. Paul DiRienzo, can you mute, please?
Yeah, so, I can't. I'm sort of walking down the street with my phone. Can you mute me for me on that side?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Okay, so in addition to, and so that was, that's Monday. And so then on Tuesday, the New Jersey CWA, which represents 70,000 people, asked to have a similar $6,500 live read. That's 1 hour, that's four times, 6,700, well, like 6,500. So that's just those 2 days alone. And so a live read is where I have a, example would be, 32BJ SCIU, America's largest building service union in 11 states. Its members say, when we fight, we win. And so that is done. And then, in addition to that, I have, been working with the, folks at, John Amella and, Ursula Rudenberg and, some other colleagues. And just recently, the American Federation of Government Employees, which represents 750,000 federal workers, has committed to a $50,000 contribution to Pacifica to be able to enable the network to bring national coverage of Reverend Barber's The Poor People's Campaign on June 29th and the Republican Convention in Milwaukee, the convention in Chicago for the Democrats, and election night. I still have roughly, I'd say, another $50,000 to round up in this first round of my efforts. From other organizations. So that's where we're at right now.
Thank you. So you are doing a focus on sponsorship? Is that how you put it?
It is. I would say it's very important here because we're also looking at the fact that we have to meet the obligation under the FCC of not selling merchandising. And that settlement, universal settlement, requires, I think, that we turn the corner. It has always been my argument that the process, we're not in the premium business. And indeed, one of the major liabilities for WBAI is the backlog of premiums. And I would say this goes very deeply into actually a fundamental question about the purpose of the radio stations. And I have a concept of the continuity of community interest. And that's not listenership. The continuity of community interest is when you engage people to the point that they feel that you're a part of their life and that they get something of value. And I'd like to give an anecdotal example of how it was I was able to take just an hour of radio and turn it into something that, and I understand that this money I'm talking about does not sustain the radio station. I have no illusion about that. But we're not sending any premiums out to do it. The program is the premium. And the way that this developed, this authentic labor program, was that the United Steel Workers, Nurses Local 4-200 went on strike in August of last year, and we had them on every Monday until December. And when the, a judge struck down their ability to picket, they had made such great effort to picket and had such great community support, but it got to 600-700 people. And the political power structure was so corrupt, I think they got to the judge and limited to just 12 people could stand outside that hospital. And so rather than let the strike be lost, I contacted Reverend Barber and Sarah Nelson, and we did a virtual radio rally with having nurses, of course, Sarah Nelson, the CWA, flight attendants, and Reverend Barber. And all kinds of people called in. And so to some degree, those nurses credit WBAI and Pacifica with sustaining them through that strike. That's what I'm talking about, the continuity of community interest. And they got their contract. And they got their state staffing. So that's a tangible thing that we delivered in the lives of these union workers.
Excellent. And I've been a fan of Reverend Barber since there was the One City Moral Mondays that his organization started with. So I'm very impressed. Okay, and what time is that Eastern on Mondays, Bob?
Yeah, it's 7 a.m., yes. And so and then Tuesday at 7 a.m., and then Mimi Rosenberg is taking the program tomorrow. We have, and also one of the things that's happening is at 1 o'clock now, we have Arnie Arneson across the grid. We had Leonard Lopate. It was somewhat controversial. Leonard, who's a dear friend, wasn't able to raise the money he thought. I mean, I think that when Leonard Lopate was picked, there was a lack of understanding that, you know, just because a professional voice comes through the radio who raised money for WNYC, I've been a colleague of him for over 20 years. The reality, though, is that at WNYC, Leonard was supported by a half dozen, primarily women, that supported every word that came out of his mouth, and a sales staff of a half dozen people that made it possible to pay a six-figure salary. I think it was naive on the part of WBAI to think that getting his voice alone, it's magical thinking that that's going to produce revenue.
Understood.
Madam Chair?
Are you open to taking questions now, Bob?
Of course.
Okay. I'm sorry, someone said, Madam Chair, who's that?
That was Susan and on the stack.
Okay, we have, you are the beginning of a stack, Susan. Anyone else trying to get on the stack? Okay, Susan, take it away.
Yeah, this is a starting conversation about closing the deficit. But I am delighted to hear that, frankly, a complaint that many have made on this committee, and I think with a lot of legitimacy, is that focusing on cost cutting is not sufficient. It needs to be about programming, and it needs to be bringing real value. And what I'm hearing is what I understood WBAI to be really great at. Combining this with connections in the community, combining this with exciting radio, and raising money that isn't gift and Chomsky dependent. I'm very excited about it. So thank you, Bob, for bringing a new vision. And, you know, we look forward to supporting you and figuring out collectively how WBAI's deficit position gets remedied.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be part of this.
Anyone else for the stack?
Madam Chair, this is Minerva.
Please go ahead, Minerva.
Okay. Thank you, Bob, for the information. And I'm trying to get a better understanding. You do have, it's, so it looks like you're looking at the time slot of 7 a.m. Is that for the full week, or is it just certain days out of the week that you do this? And this is how you're proposing to bring in funds to help the station eliminate their deficit. Is that correct?
So here's the actually, it's, what's happened is one of the sad things about, is somebody else, it sounds like there's static on the line.
We're getting a lot of noise on the line. Please mute yourself if you're not speaking.
Myla, I'm looking at the dashboard. Stephanie, were you saying that you and Bob are on the same phone line?
No, we're not
on the same phone line. He didn't have a passcode to get into the call, so I was told to give him mine.
Okay.
I'm muted. So right, I'm not talking.
I'll try to proceed to answer the question because it's important. So
go ahead.
I have just really had this position for a few days. It's important though to understand that we're trying to, I refer to this as like trying to change the fan belt with the engine running, because we're in the middle of trying to maintain operations also at the same time changing the way that the producers perceive their obligation and opportunity. What has happened over this period of time, and much of it has to do with the pandemic, is producers have really been reduced to being isolated. Management's not present, hasn't been, and this is true throughout the country. And so I've been there every day for the last few days. And so also, I'm sad to say that other programmers are not listening to other programs, radio programs. How can we expect the population to listen to it when we're not willing to listen to our own peers and forward promote? And so it's much bigger than just an isolated thing about my show at 7 and on Monday and Tuesday. But it's also that I keep coming back to the idea of the continuity of community interest. And so what I'm doing with, and I'm finding great reception, is meeting with very talented producers who have felt abused by this system. This reminds me of a team of Borax mules in the desert being beaten and pushed for revenue without being given the tools that are compliant with the law. And so what I'm doing is meeting with them all individually and having a conversation about, and the way you do this to nurture and support and inspire, is to say, share with me the three best programs you're proudest of. Where is the nexus here? Where is the continuity of community interest for you? And so that's, then you begin to identify, case in point, we have John Kane, who has got a great program. He is, again, continuity of community interest, and he has a number of Native organizations that wanted to support his program because we bring him a unique voice, and so now he is a Native American up in the North Country, and so I spoke with him. There were several tribes for like 3 years. He wanted to be get this up and running, but he was never given the language. And there is, as you all know, if you've done this course, there's language that you have to do. You have to work with it. It's a process of negotiating with the potential sponsor. And so this is really taking an inventory, producer by producer. And you're going to come across instances where folks are just out of gas. And I believe that with a compassionate conversation, they may be aware of that as well, and then what you do, you don't want to discourage people, you may be combining with other people, and then together they can find the continuity of community interest. So 7 a.m. across the board, yeah, so that's basically the program.
Madam Chair, we're at 14 and a half minutes. I move to extend by 5.
Move to extend by 5. Are there any objections for this item? Hearing none, let's continue for another 5.
I just wanted to add one other point. So, and this is an example of, we had a situation where there was the former management at BI was instructed to cut. And so they had a very talented African-American, brilliant woman who is working for, I guess, $24,000 in a very precarious situation, doing the work that a half dozen people used to do at WNYC to support Leonard Lopez. Leonard was on making $60,000 a year. So the prior administration decided to go in and whack everybody. And then the idea was that they were going to put my program
objection,
in the Symphony.
Objection, Madam okay. Chair? Apologies, yes. Bob, but
okay.
These are anything having to do with names and compensation are for executive session only.
Okay. My suggestion was that we not have a situation where if we were going to eliminate, then we had to think about how were we going to replace something that would generate revenue. And so I suggested Arnie Arneson, who is an established figure up in New Hampshire, one of the best-known American political feminists that there is, first person to run for governor in New Hampshire as a Democrat, a woman, and also has an amazing Rolodex. She's on about 30 or 40 Pacific stations. And so that is now with the Cross a Grid from Monday through Friday, and it's midday, so the numbers aren't great, but I'm in the process of closing on $2,500 from five separate nonprofits, nurses unions, nonprofit organizations, social justice groups. So that entire grid will have a live read Monday through Friday. Again, it doesn't pay for everything, but we're not sending out any tchotchkes.
Myla for the staff.
Our poll for staff.
Go ahead. Our poll, I hear you. Myla, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. And thanks. I am having a little trouble understanding this term, continuity of community interest. Can you explain it in plain language, in plain English, for knowledge such as myself?
Okay. No, I'm not pleased. It's just when we say listenership, that doesn't do it. And that's, you know, if you look at WBAI in terms of listenership, well, Jim Dingman knows this, it doesn't register. So then you have to have with the people that are listening, there has to be an intensity and a commitment to it, to follow up. They have to feel vested. And that's why it's not a passive thing, because they have to be willing to put something at risk or something of value to make sure that it stays intact, because they're getting something. It's deeper than just casual listening. They feel like they belong to something bigger than themselves. That help?
Well, so but in terms of continuity of community interests, are you talking about in terms of continuity? No, it doesn't really help what you said.
What I'm saying is that what we had was a fractured situation where shows, people would be developing a certain momentum in programming. And then based on a kind of random calculus, based on whenever the wolf was at the door, they'd throw people off the air, and then we would introduce these non-compliant programs where we would sell earth mats and other things that were, as the FCC has said, non-compliant. And that disrupts the ability of producers to develop this continuity of community interest.
Now I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Myla. Or Paul, go ahead.
Okay. But it is an interesting idea, and I do want to inject a little bit of more history here. I know that there have been people talking about it's the programming for quite a long time, and I will also note that I remember back in the 90s, I don't want to say heated, but warm discussions regarding basically premium stuff and whether they were a bubble or not. So this is a question that's been raised at WBAI for actual decades and decades at this point. I just wanted to raise that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Minerva. May I speak again?
Go ahead, Minerva.
Okay. And thank you, Bob, for sharing. It sounds like to me that there are groups, like you mentioned, the nurses, that want to be able to hear information about what's going on within their grouping. And rather than right now try to look at emails or Facebook and things like that, this is giving them a home, is what I'm hearing. And by then,
yes.
Sponsoring. So there could be other groups in this same range. I'm in Prince George's County, and I've said that I really don't feel for my community that I'm hearing on air things that people like myself want to know about my community. So setting up something similar to what you're doing would then bring listeners and know they could come on WPFW on a Friday at 10 o'clock and hear for an hour what's going on in our area. Is this? Am I voicing what you're saying correctly?
And actually, wanted to thank you, and quite poignantly so, healthcare professionals, and this is one of the things 3,600 nurses died in the first wave of the pandemic, 500 in New York, 300 in New Jersey. And so the toll of essential workers, they've been through a traumatic event, and they're the only entities holding the medical system accountable right now across the nation. Labor is having a major revival. And so if we can be present at that and integrate that with the community, then I think that we'll be seeing, and that's one of the reasons why, for instance, Reverend Barber is interested in specifically Pacifica. And that's because he, last Monday we had him on, and it's so funny. Initially he started, he only wanted to do 10 minutes. Now he hangs around for the whole show and wants that select music. So I'm happy. I'm happy. And sometimes I lose him to Morning Joe. But he was pointing out to me that they have 85 million low wealth and low wage voters in this country, and a majority of them don't vote. Why don't they vote? They've done analysis and they've said because they don't hear their issues in the conversation. So this is an opportunity for us to help them both get on the stage and frame their issues and to document locally the things that we are not seeing or hearing anywhere else.
All right. Are you...
I'll pull for a second, bite fast.
Okay, I have something to say first. I want to begging
pardon. We're past. I moved to extend another 5 minutes. We went past five.
How fast can we do this? Is anyone object to extending this item for another 5 minutes? Hearing no objections, we're adding five. I'm speaking out to Paul DiRienzo, listening in. Paul, I unmuted you a few minutes ago. The background sound is still there, so I expect that you're still commuting. I'll give it another try in a few minutes, all right? Our Paul, you wanted to go again. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a very fast one. I'd like to ask, so with, you know, getting the sponsorship and all of this stuff, you are consulting with a lawyer on every one of these details, right?
What we do is, now that we have this consent decree, the process is it goes to John and it's reviewed by your SEC lawyer. We had that happen, for instance, there was a TWU.
Okay, so it is being reviewed by the lawyer before each of these.
Exactly.
Agreements are entered into.
Yes. Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our Paul, I have a question. Bob, it was about the money you're raising for the national programming, including the Democratic Convention and the election. That money, you said it's $50,000 so far. You believe there'll be another $50,000?
Right, I'm hopeful, yes. Right.
Yeah, to cover the cost.
Yeah.
How about is money being raised for Pacifica, or is that coming through as, I don't know, WBAI being the conduit?
No. How is that set up? No, they're directly. These are, and I've been sharing with the executive leadership the back and forth on what's very interesting about the AFG is that the American Federation of Government Employees, that money was a consequence that I went down and covered the SEIU's national meeting, and Reverend Barber was there. I did a live remote, and Dr. Kelly, who is president of the AFG, the largest, 750,000 federal workers in all 50 states, I paired them on the radio, and they'd never met before. And they had an amazing conversation about the importance of a 50-state effort from everything from union organizing to civil rights. And then then Reverend Barber asked me for Dr. Kelly's cell phone number. So I want that when I talk to you about the continuity of community interest, that's what I'm talking about, is linking people up in a meaningful way. And so it is, that $50,000 is specifically for, it comes in as specifically earmarked for national programming. And so these other smaller things, 6,500 range, those are identified as for BAI. But they all go to Pacifica because that's how we do things, right? We're all supposed to send all the money the Pacifica, right? It's not supposed to make any kind of side stop, correct?
Well, the bills have to be paid, but understood. Yes, eventually it does pass through. All right. Do we have
If I may interject real quickly,
sure.
Yes, the funds are being raised for national programming for the Pacifica Foundation, but what we're going to do with it as well is that for those stations that are assisting us with this project, we want to make sure that the board ops and the reporters are getting paid in order to do this national programming. So, yes, the money is coming in, but we'll be putting it right back out to those stations that will be assisting with this program.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we're doing. That's we have also got reporters. We're working, and Ursula has been such an essential, the affiliate is such a wonderful resource and really engaged here.
Yeah. Right. That's, I think it's over 200 affiliates now that office is representing. Yes. And I'm from KPFA, so I believe you're getting Mitch Jezerich in on some of this coverage. So, thanks. Any other questions?
Myla for the chat.
Go ahead, Myla.
You read my mind, Arlene, and I just like confirmation of that because I can't imagine national coverage of a political convention without the voice of Mitch Jezerich, who is certainly one of our best and brightest reporters on these issues.
Yes, he's involved in this project, just so you know. John Amello and everyone has been communicating.
Right. And this is where we really, really start missing Larry Bensky. Are we coming to the end of the question period here, folks? Anybody else?
We're at the end of the 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to match. If we are done with the stack, Bob, we have questioned you to our fullest, and we're pretty much at the end of this item. So if you have a last 30-second thing to throw out, go right ahead. Otherwise, we will move on to Stephanie.
I will make myself available at any time to discuss any of this, and I'm just really excited to be part of this opportunity. I wish I could share with you that we are getting a lot of positive response from these producers. I mean, we have to be kind to ourselves. We've been through a lot as a nation and as a network.
Thank you. Thanks for giving us your time tonight. Bob.
Thanks very much. I'm going to go back to getting home. Thank you so much.
Okay, and you'll probably be called back a good number of times over the year, but thanks for this first one. Okay.
Happy to join. So, thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let us back up again to item number 8, the Executive Director's Open Report and Q&A. Stephanie, it's yours.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and start with the sale of the Los Angeles building. The close of escrow has been officially extended to July 8th, and that was as per recommendations from the buyers of the building in order to allow the additional time that we need for the logistics of the liens on the two loans. The FJC lien should be removed momentarily. We've been able to successfully work with them to remove the late penalties and that we received. There was a 15% that was put on the late fees that we were paying. So they are going to be removing that. We're going to be putting the proceeds from the sale of the building into an interest-bearing restricted account. So while we use that to pay down some of our vendors and to get our audit started and a lot of those other, you know, pay off some of the vendors that we need to pay off in order to continue to move forward successfully, as well as help offset some of the costs that KPFK and the archives have already incurred for the move, we will be able to also be getting interest on those, on the money that is set aside there. So we are making a success with that. We have been making success as well with the Small Business Administration Economic Injury Disaster Loan. We have a I have a person that is in there that I've been able to connect with on a regular basis. And so we're working right now on the application for the hardship accommodation plan. This doesn't really have anything to do with the lien itself, but they did let me know that there is an SBA hardship accommodation plan that will, it's a plan that offers to reduce the payments that are starting at 10% of our usual amount or can be as low as $25 a month with the option to extend after a certain period of time. The current payment for that loan is $8,731 per month, and we haven't been able to make one of those payments yet. So although it has been slow moving forward, getting those liens removed and working with both the SBA and FJC, we are making success, and we do truly hope with our fingers crossed that we'll be able to meet that July 8th close of escrow. We have finalized the agreement with the American Association of Public Broadcasting, who and the Library of Congress, and they are they have agreed to digitize our entire archive collection. They will be visiting actually the archives. Well, they will be visiting the archive offices this week, and our archive director will be there, and we're going to be going through the materials that we have on site. They've been sent pictures of all the archive materials that we have in our storage sites. We have five storage facilities off-site that we'll be emptying out soon to put in a leased space that we have just to hold those out in Signal Hill in Southern California. But in the meantime, the AAPB and the Library of Congress will, again, be visiting the archives so they can kind of take a look at what we have on site that may be the easiest to grab the first 35,000 that they'll be digitizing by the end of this year. Since those have been in a nice enclosed environment, we have records of what's there, they're cataloged, those are what we're going to choose from. So when they come with their visit, they're just going to sort of get a lay of the land, see what we have, take a look at the CDs that we have, our the paper products that we have, or programs, photographs, because they're going to be helping us catalog and digitize and archive those as well. So that whole process, as I said, we should have 35,000 pieces completed by the end of this year, and then we'll continue to work through the rest of the collection and hopefully finish with the digitization of everything by early 2026. So we're also working on trying to find a landing spot when everything is digitized. AAPB is paying for the shipping to and from our facility of the materials as they become digitized, so we won't incur any of those costs. And they will be, once they finish and package it up and do everything that's, you know, keeping it all in a nice place, and they'll ship everything back to us. And we are now currently looking on a place that we can permanently house the physical materials because we don't want to throw anything away once they are digitized. We are also getting digitized copies of everything once they are digitized. We have copies of everything as well. So everything will be housed, as I said, on the AAPB website, so we don't have to pay for the monitoring or upkeep of a website. And we will maintain all intellectual property for the materials, and any sort of licensing agreements or payments for any commercial use or anything that is non-educational, historians can use it, scholars and educators, but anything above and beyond that, all the licensing will come back to Pacifica to agree upon, and then also to get the money from that. So in the meantime, while all of this is going on, the PRA, we've been working on a business plan really for them to figure out while this digitization is going on, they still need to be able to generate revenue. So I've had quite a few conversations with the director of the archives, especially right now, to focus on creating a premium thank you gift. We're still in FCC training. You think I would remember that by now. A thank you gift that really could help support this national programming that we're doing surrounding the RNC and the DNC. So there was a program that was created quite a few years ago from the archives, I believe, that covered a lot of historical convention materials dating up to 2000, and I believe the program was released in 2004. So we're looking, the archive director will be looking at that, revising it, re-editing it, and working with the stations to see what it is that they may need to support our convention, national convention coverage. And then this will either become a program that will be in support of and supplemental to the convention coverage that we're planning nationally, or as a premium that can support that. So everything with that we'll be working on that, and we'll be able to give updates for everything as we move forward. Speaking of the consent decree, we have already paid two of our five-month installment payments. We have paid them before the due date, which is great. We just have three more to go. And we have already started our FCC compliance training. We trained all the general managers and program directors and a few select personnel from each of the stations to last week, and then we rolled out the training for all of the program employees, or everybody that's connected to programming, which is at close to about 785 people at this point. We received contact lists from all of the general managers, but we still need to update some of them because there are some people that are registering that weren't on the original list when we sent it out, but they are part of the programming staff. So we're doing two trainings per day for the rest of the month. We have to complete all of the trainings of all employees by the end of June, and we have our first compliance report that needs to be turned into the FCC the first week of July. So we're averaging anywhere between 25 to 45 people per session, but we're going to do a heavy push at the end of this week to encourage the general managers and the program directors to make sure that their staff gets trained. But it's an hour roughly of a pre-recorded training that was recorded while we were providing the training from the FCC by our FCC attorney to our general managers. And then we just Otis made a couple of quick tweaks and edits on it, and we've been starting the training by having everybody watch that video, which is about 45 minutes to an hour, and then we have the session. It's all via Zoom, and then we have live Q&A with John and myself for half an hour to 45 minutes. And then any questions or people that we can't answer at that time and we need to run by our FCC attorney, we encourage them to send it to us at compliance@pacifica.org, and then we'll address those questions at a later date and get the immediate answers for them and then mail it off. But it's been, as I said, helpful. People have had a lot of great questions. Our programmers have been very supportive and eager to learn to follow the FCC compliance and the rules, and hopefully it's been eye-opening, and I think we're not going to have any problem whatsoever following the settlement agreement or the consent decree that we have been asked to do. Anybody have any questions?
This is Minerva, and I'm on the stack.
Okay, Minerva, you are first on the stack. Go ahead.
Okay, Stephanie, I have two questions for you. In terms of the training, you said there are about approximately 700 people to be trained. How many of those individuals would you have to do on a weekly basis to meet that getting all this done before the end of June, since we're only a few weeks away before the end?
Well, definitely more than are actually attending some of the meetings. So as I said, today we only had like 20 and 25 and others. But even if we're going to need close to 16 trainings of 45 people per in order to reach just 785. So we're doing two trainings per day. We have this certain times on even days, certain times on odd days. So we have approximately 5-10. We'll be able to make it if we increase the number of people that are attending each session to greater than 45. We will most to add some evening trainings. We're trying to avoid weekend trainings, but we both John and I, are aware that we'll probably have to add some weekend trainings as well. So that's why we're encouraging the programmers that have taken the training to talk to the fellow programmers, and we're heavily encouraging the GMs and the PDs to emphasize that we need to get it done.
And what happens if these individuals do not attend this training?
Well, what we have told people, that if they don't attend the training prior to the deadline, that their program will be, they will be suspended from the air until they do take the training. And that's because if we put out our first compliance report to the FCC and we have to state that we haven't even met in this first month, one of the things they've asked us to do, it's really not putting us off on a good start. We are having weekly meetings with our FCC attorney, and so since we've gone through, on Friday, we will have gone through 1 week of training two times per day, that we will share with him the number of people that have gone through the training. We're breaking it down. When people register, they have to let us know one of the required fields of the registration is what station they're from. So we're going to let the FCC attorney know how many people we've gone through, the logistics and the reality of meeting that deadline. If he feels that we're not going to be able to get 70, 80, 90% of the people trained, then he will reach back out to the FCC and let them know. But we're doing everything we possibly can to have to avoid telling the FCC that we are only going to reach 80%. And then when we run the list also, because we run a registration list daily, and we can break it down by the station so we can see what stations may not be participating as actively, and then we will reach out to them directly and ask them to please emphasize that people need to attend the training. Because we don't want to pull people from the air. We don't want to do that, because that's just going to become, you know, sort of more of a more problematic if not every program has an evergreen program that can run in its place. So that is really the last thing that we want to do. So we're going to do everything we possibly can to try to accommodate everybody's schedules.
This is Myla for the staff.
Minerva, are you done?
Yes.
And Lyndon for the staff, please.
Okay, I'm going to say that Minerva is off, and so it's my last.
And then Lyndon, please.
I have you on the staff, Lyndon.
Okay, Stephanie, I admit, I get so many emails, I have not signed up yet for the training, and I want to do it, and I want to know, is there an easy way to sign up? Do you know?
Yes, we sent out the sign up link to all the general managers and to the general managers and the program directors, and we're using an app called Sign Up Genius, which lists all of the days and the times, as if they're set times for even days or set times for odd days. But what we're going to do is, since we have the list that was the lists that were given to us by the program directors of all of the programmers, we're now comparing that to the people that have registered, or people that have registered and then couldn't show up on the day that they registered. And then we'll be reaching out to people individually with the link and letting them know, you know, you need to try to sign up before this time.
Oh, good. So I should have something from you?
Yeah, you can wait. I can send you the link directly, too. But once we get through this 1 week and we run all the spreadsheets and we can compare, then we'll start doing a lot of direct email. And we're giving the program, and we're giving also all the general managers the Zoom links for the two daily meetings. Each morning they're getting that, so in case anybody calls and they can't find the link or they didn't get the link, then they can get it from their general manager. So
okay.
Sending out Zoom links to everybody. Yeah, people register, and then we send out the Zoom links to everybody the night before the next training, so it doesn't get lost in their inbox and they can see it up at the top.
I have read a lot of the material, so I'll be happy to take the training.
Motion to extend for 10.
Thank you, Susan. We have a motion to extend for 10 minutes on this item, the ED report. Is there any objection to such an extension?
Hearing no objection, we will extend now at 10. Thank you. Lyndon, you are up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Stephanie, I would like to thank you and congratulate you and anybody else who deserves thanks and congratulations for saving our archives. That's a great accomplishment. And I would also like to make a suggestion as far as the thank you gifts that have to do with coming from the archives. I've heard in the past thank you gifts that were, you know, enormous amount of hours. And I would hope that, you know, I can't remember if it's 300 hours or 50 hours, which I thought was just, always thought was just way too much material. So I hope that y'all will concentrate on quality over quantity in this thank you gift that you're thinking about. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and 100% agree. Because we're kind of, you know, old saying, selling the farm when we put everything out there on one thumb drive for one gift, when that gift could have probably been split up to multiple.
I have no one on the stack right now. I'm going to take Paul DiRienzo off mute and see how things are going for him. Hold on.
Hello?
Paul.
Hi.
Yeah.
When I last time I was on, I was on the corner of 34th Street and 8th Avenue, Midtown Manhattan. Now I'm over in the East Village of 2nd Avenue, and it's a lot quieter over here. I'm sitting by a park. So that said, you know, I live in Manhattan. I don't have any specific questions, but a general question, and that is, has it been taken into account? What I hear is that there's been a tremendous collapse in listeners, sponsorship at WBAI since these changes happened. Is the union dues, the union money that's being come in, going to replace the listener donations that are coming in? And does it matter to the Pacifica National Board Finance Committee?
I'm not sure who you're addressing that to.
To the executive director.
All right. Well, you asked if it, you made a question.
Yes.
To the,
and have you taken into account the loss? Have you taken into account the loss of listener support because of the things that have changed and happened? And do you think that the union support will replace and should replace the listener support?
There was no intention for any union support to replace listener support. The union support are sponsorships that were coming in 2 months, started probably 2 or 3 months ago. So it isn't anything that was to take that place. I have not seen any reports pulled from Allegiance that show there has been any significant decline in listener support over the past 3 days or 4 days.
Right. I've heard the opposite. I've heard that people are telling me on the basis who actually work with the on the air that they have seen a significant decline.
I haven't seen the numbers yet from Allegiance or from the reporting to validate that. So once those reports come in, then we'll have a better idea with the numbers. But the listeners or
right.
the any sort of support that's coming from the unions, again, that is any much just like any sort of sponsorship that would be coming in. And that same plan of reaching out to organizations that can support a specific program is something that with any of the underwriting and sponsorship that has been, you know, rolled out quite a long time now.
Right. Is it going to be enough?
Well, it never is enough with just the sponsorships. I mean, that's why listener support has never been enough, which is why
right.
the PMB worked so hard to try to get the underwriting motion
right.
passed, which had happened in order to allow the stations to do that. So this
I'm sorry to jump in because you don't have much time, but I'm just saying that what I've been hearing is that there's definitely discomfort among a lot of the listeners and a decline in is definitely coming.
I'll have to wait and see the reports and see the numbers.
That's what I hear is happening already.
I'll have to wait and see the numbers to see if that's the case.
Thank you.
Paul, do you have anything else? I'm going to have to put you back on mute.
I'm all right. I'm in a quiet. I'm in a quiet area. Just you, me, and some rats. Me and some rats over on 12th Street.
All right. But if I keep hearing the glassware, I'll put you on mute. But I just
saw five of the biggest rats in my life run across my path. Okay. Well, I'm on the Pacifica meeting. Now you know something about New York. A lot of rats.
All right. Do we have others for the stack? Oh, and Minerva, let me ask you if you can personally mute your phone. It's picking something up and feeding it back. Okay? Thank you.
Madam Chair, Susan for the stack.
Go ahead, Susan. All right, Susan, you're up.
Great. Under this item 8, we may have discussed this before. I forget where we stand, but report on National Office Budget 2024 to review, report on NFO 2025 budget. Where do we stand on those? And maybe that's Darlene and others on the committee who can remind me.
Well, Susan, it's in the questions of when the heck are we going to get to the national office budget, but I did check that with Stephanie, so she gave me some, you know, information on that she's able to do that review as soon as we call her up, because now we've gotten all the station budgets and but she is, in fact, already working on the 2025 budget, at least as best she can, until we confirm for her the Central Services payments.
So that's a follow-up question. So we'll be addressing those in future meetings. Is that right?
Yes,
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have the projected budget for 2024, and I have a proposed 2025 budget. I just need to send it out to – I didn't get it to the committee in time prior to this meeting, but I do have the spreadsheet that has the 2024 actuals based on first quarter, the projected 2024 based upon the actuals and – profit loss, and then the 2025 proposed, and then, of course, comparison to the 2022 actuals and 2023 actuals. So I can send that out to Darlene and our Paul to send out, but that doesn't give people, unfortunately, my bad, enough time to review it and take a close look at it before I speak about it.
Madam Chair, may I request that we have those early in the agenda of the next meeting?
Well, yes, we're going to build a lot of that agenda in this meeting. Stephanie would 2 weeks from now be convenient and give you enough time to prepare.
Yes, because as I'm looking at it right now.
Just double checking. All right. Does that help, Susan?
Yes. Yes. I mute and unmute. Yes.
All right. Thank you. Stephanie, are you complete on the open session EV report?
Yeah, I do want to give one shout out, though. Just KPFK at the LSB meeting this last week, we actually were reviewing the 2025 budget. So at the LSB meeting on Sunday, we had a projected the projected income statement for the remaining of this fiscal year. And then we actually had our first draft of the fiscal year 25 budget. So they are in the process, KPFK. Shout out to their treasurer and LSB for working on that budget already, and Markeisha for putting that together, and our staff, Angie. So So we're very happy that that's happening, and we are now working on the WPFW budget, and we will give that to the treasurer and the LSB to treasurer to review, and the general manager, interim general manager, to review. So that should be done shortly. And just because there are things in the KPFK budget, excuse me, that pertain to the archives, particularly with the move and rent and those expenses, we're going to be pushing up the archive budget after we finish with the WPFW budget, because that will adjust some of the numbers that were with KPFK. So,
Madam Chair, this is
Laura. We're ahead of schedule.
Oh, sorry,
yes,
Stephanie.
Go ahead, Myla.
Stephanie, I am remiss. I have been meaning to thank you. Your presence and the presentation that you gave to the KPFK LSB was so clear and helpful. And I got a lot of feedback from people. They were just enormously grateful that you helped present the budget and explain it so well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we are at time.
Yes. Stephanie, have you for a brief time in the executive session, but I think you are done at this moment and can take a breather. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, folks. We are up to item 10 in our LSC. Time check, please. We're at 9:44 on the East Coast. Is that correct?
Yeah.
9:44. Yeah. Okay. We need to make a quick decision because we were hoping to move to the closed portion at 9:50. Not a time certain. It was just an estimate. So what we have yet is number 10, give the stations and the LSC Finance Committee a timeline for getting their budgets in. And it's great to know that there are already two of them near closing. Number 11, items that we should sort of prioritize for ourselves. And then 12, I only have to do a 1 minute, even that.
Charlene, I'm sorry. There's so much noise. I cannot hear you because of all the extra noise on the line. It's
okay,
impossible.
Hold on. Are you still there, Myla?
Yes. Yeah. Unmute. I try
okay,
to stay muted. You sound okay now.
Pardon?
You sound okay now, but I couldn't hear
you.
Okay.
So the question is, folks, shall we take up those items that are going to keep coming up, which are 10 and 11 on tonight's agenda, or not? Or are we going to go to a closed session at roughly 9:50?
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
This is Susan?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know of anything that especially needs to be dealt with in closed session. And I would really welcome it if we could get through 10 and 11 tonight.
Okay, in executive session, there is Stephanie's report in closed session, and there was a previous motion regarding WBAI that's still sort of out there sitting around, and there was old business So those are the three things that are actually actual items in executive session.
So I was the maker of the motion regarding WBAI,
yes.
And it is better that it be held off and for a future meeting that the new IGM can attend.
All right. Well, then what we still have is a closed session report from Stephanie.
Perhaps Stephanie can advise whether there are things that are critical from a time standpoint in closed session.
All right, Stephanie, your break is over. I'm calling you back for this question.
I was going to pick up my daughter from work, so thankfully I didn't. I didn't do that during this break. Excuse me. There isn't anything that I need to report in closed session, but I can report, or just a follow up, that in looking at the number of listeners at WBAI since Friday, there has been no change to the number of listeners on our stream.
All right. Thank you for having checked that so quickly. All right. Well, thank you very much, Stephanie. I'll pretend you get a break now again. I think we're going to come to the conclusion that we can not have a closed session tonight, and it won't, I don't know, break the bank. So,
Madam Chair,
but that might be the case. Who
Madam Chair,
asked for who is that?
It's Art Paul.
Hi, Art Paul. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, our choice at this point is to either strike 10 and 11 and go to 12 and go to executive session, or to move to strike going to the executive session. That's sort of our choice at this point in time, and that'll resolve the problem.
Madam
Chair?
Yes, Susan?
Given our Paul's advice, I move that we strike 12 and 13, and that we end at, but that we still end at something. when we had our expected closing.
9:50 Eastern.
9:50 Eastern.
We just hit 9 Eastern. So, but the executive session was expected to end at, hold on, 10:45 Eastern.
So the question is, you
can make it as a motion, Susan. I'm just going to state the question. Is, following up on what Susan said, do we strike 12 and 13 and claim the time certain of 10:45 Eastern to be able to finally finish items 10 and 11 that have been carryovers on our agenda?
I so move striking 12 and 13 and extending 10 and 11 to the 10:45 end time.
Okay, so we're going to strike the items 10 and 11 of the open session.
No,
we're
going to strike 12 and 13.
12 and 13, okay. Okay, so 12 and 13. Okay, got it.
Thank you, R. Paul. So the question, so we understand that that's what we're asking folks to do. Only stay in open session and use the 10:45 time certain for this meeting. Are there any objections? And, of course, if we finish our business before 10:45, we will end then. There's no need to drag it out. All right. I hear no objections, so that is what will happen. So I had sent a little note out
saying, could everyone come in with the date, the upcoming date of your station's LSD meeting? Now, there's a difference, I realize, afterwards, between the LSD finance committees and the LSD, but if we could get the list of, let me put it this way. If we can date that when we want everything to be ready to come to the committee, we can then look and see if, in fact, all the LSDs are going to be having a chance to meet a couple of times between then and now. We are at the beginning of June 11th, I believe, tomorrow night. There are several LSD meetings, but I want to make sure that there's at least one of every LSD meeting coming up in August, and we could use that as a date to give us as a turn-in point for the budgets for that station. I'd like to hear everybody else's opinion. I'll run the stack. Who would like to go first?
Myla?
Lyndon.
Okay, Myla. Lyndon.
Our Paul.
Okay. That's where we get started. Myla.
Okay. So as you just heard from Stephanie, KPFK is ahead of the pack at the moment. We have a draft budget that we went over thoroughly with the Stephanie gave us about an hour and a half of her time to go over the budget in great detail. It is still a draft. We're planning to look at it again next month. The KPFK Local Station Board meets on the second Sunday of each month. So next month, we'll be meeting on July 14th. Isn't that Bastille Day? I think it might be. Yeah. Anyway, maybe we need to cancel to celebrate Bastille Day. I don't know. At any rate, we plan to look at it again. Our treasurer, Stephen Meeks, is here as well. And the LSB hasn't really convened a finance committee. We've been looking at the budget as a whole LSB. And I'm not exactly sure what the plans are. Stephen, do you want to say anything about our process? Are you with us?
Did you say Stephanie or Susan? Or
Oh, I said Stephen.
Oh, okay.
Stephen Meeks?
Our treasurer?
Hold on. Let me double check.
Anyway,
on the call, Myla.
Did you say he is not?
He is not on the call, right.
Oh, okay. So that's why he didn't say anything. Let me just say that we most likely will not be meeting in August. But hopefully, and Stephanie, if you might, if you have any insight into when you think that the KPFK LSB might be able to move our budget forward, the FY 2025 budget.
Well, all the changes that were suggested at the last meeting we'll be able to have by the next. You see, you do have a meeting in July, or you don't? It won't take long to.
We do. No, July 14th.
Oh, yeah. The goal was to have those changes put in by July 14th. And then at that point, I'll kind of have a better idea as to what to pull out from the for the archives. Because you guys were sharing rent, and we needed to add that extra column of just moving expenses like we did with WPFW.
So if we don't meet in August, it won't be a problem because we should be able to have it for final approval on Bastille Day.
Or whenever, if we have an NFC meeting,
the
14th. Then the late, correct, and a meeting after the 14th in July, we should be able to approve the KPFK budget in July at the NFC meeting.
It's just that we don't have a local finance committee. But you're saying that the FS, the national could do it?
The LSB should be able to approve. Yeah, I don't think the National Finance Committee needs to approve it if the LSB approves it, but please correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks.
Well, when your LSB approves it, then it comes to the NFC for review and question. And we meet on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. You can always work out the schedule that way. And let us know when you've got it.
Okay.
Okay.
We should probably have it on the 14th of July, with luck.
Okay, hold on. If you want me to jump ahead, you have it on the 14th, and we meet on the 16th of July. So let's
I think, I think we meet on the 23rd of July and the 9th. That's what's on the calendar right now in KPFTX.
Which your LSB or this committee?
Y'all are killing me with the calendar.
If you look at KPFTX for July, it has the NFC meeting on the 9th, the 2nd Tuesday, and the 23rd, which is the 4th Tuesday.
All right. Then it looks like we're booking... hopefully the 23rd KPFC budget 2025. Okay. That's excellent. Next on the stack was Lyndon.
Yes, thank you. The KPFT Finance Committee has approved our budget for 2025, and it should be on the agenda for July. I believe that'll be July 9th. So hopefully it'll pass then, our LSB, and we'll be ready for you before Bastille Day.
Okay.
Could I get the stack? This is Paul for the stack.
Okay.
Paul for the stack.
Right.
Is Gina for the stack?
On the stack.
Paul for the stack. Am I there?
Okay.
Hello?
I'm sorry, Paul Pienzo, you're on the staff. Right.
Thanks.
Now,
is
Lynn, are you done?
Yeah,
yes, I'm done.
Okay.
And I believe R. Paul is next.
Yep.
Yes, he is. R. Paul. That's why I got confused. Okay.
And Christina for the staff, Darlene. I don't know if you heard me.
Thank you. I did not. Thank you, Christina.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Yes, first of all, historically, I've sent out, and I think the chair has also sent out, past timelines for all of these budgets. And usually they list July 31st as the deadline for LSBs to get their next year's draft budgets done and sent to the NFC. So doing it by August, mid-August, that should be fine too. The timelines have not been written in stone for a long time. So I think if we can do it by mid-August, we'll be doing pretty decently. For WBAI, our LSB meetings are on the second Wednesday of every month, so July 10th and August 14th will be our meetings. So could we get one done by August 14th? I don't know. We do have a local finance committee that will go over these things, and we'll see how recent changes affect our ability to get the FY25 budget moving here. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, our
So can I go on? Yeah. Okay, so I've been given the WBAI SecureAllegiance.com report. It's called the Campaign Report. It says, officially. WBAI made $2,500 from 0601 to today,
06/11/2024. I object.
1,599
off
the
top. This is off
and
topic.
And we are supposed to make at least $2,500 per day. They're making 10% of their budget every day.
Paul, you're making this like your every meeting.
I'm looking at the Allegiance reports.
We are talking about the LSB.
That is a conflict with
budget.
What the executive director said, and it's worth
out of order. Out of order.
Object.
It shows here, $1,599 came from one person, David Rothenberg.
Out of order.
And we're supposed to make.
This is dilatory. It's out of order.
Okay.
He needs to stop.
Okay. Okay. It's off. It's off. It's off. Okay. Now.
Thank you.
Paul DiRienzo is being passed over for this. Stack, Christina, you are up.
Yes. I wanted to let you know our next LSB meeting is on July the 20th, and our budget review meeting where we typically pass it is on September 21st. Our business manager always allows a couple weeks ahead of time all of the board members to attend an explanation meeting of at least two different dates she always provides. So people on our board will have an opportunity to ask questions and go over it prior to voting on it on September 21st. So that's my report. Thank you.
Okay, and September 21st, and our meeting in September is... Oh, gosh.
September 21st.
No, I'm sorry. The KPFA LSB meets on September 21st, and we expect to have had two Q&A sessions with Maria by then to pass the budget on the 21st. And I'm
That's
looking
correct.
At... Okay, and
Paul
I am
for the,
looking...
Paul for the stack.
No, yes, Paul, but only on this issue and only, okay?
Nonsense.
The 21st
nonsense.
Is LSB.
Nonsense. You can't tell a lie and not be confronted on it.
This is obstructive in its personalities, engaging in personalities.
Well, no, it's not. It's the truth. I'm reading from the Allegiance.
Somebody
trial.
Cut him off.
I got it. Oh,
could
so
you
you're taking a member
him?
Off.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
That. You could be sued for
Hold
that.
Hold on. I'm giving it a go. Hold on.
Yeah, please mute him.
I am trying, Susan. Okay. There we go. Until somebody else helps him get back on, he's gone. Okay.
Point of order, Madam Chair?
Yes.
In a committee meeting, you can't actually do that. Just saying. So, you know, it has to be dealt with in some way, but unilaterally cutting somebody off is not the proper way within the rules we're supposed to go by.
Call for the stack.
Our Paul, the new edition Paul of Robert
DiRienzo
of Order
for
on the
stack.
Telephonic rules say...
Stop trying to silence you're breaking your rules trying to silence me. How dare you?
Oh, stop it, Paul.
How dare you?
Not, excuse me, Christina for the stack, please.
Wait a minute. Okay, everybody wants the chair. Give me a chance. All right. So, Christina was giving the report about KPFA and when we could expect, the LSC could expect the, budget as passed.
Yeah.
And it's true we have a meeting on the 24th of September.
21st.
Christina. The 21st. I am now asking this committee when we're if we have an agreement on when we're meeting in September, is it not the 24th?
I'm looking at the calendar. This is Myla, and you are correct, Darlene.
Okay. So, Christina, it's down to the wire, but we're going to put KPFA on expected to be on the agenda of September 24th. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I did want to make one quick comment here. I've been working with the parliamentarian for 3 years, and it is inaccurate that you cannot mute somebody if they're not acknowledging the chair at a committee meeting. The LSBs, per the bylaws, are stated they're all standing committees. So this is no different than that. And if you don't acknowledge the chair, it's one of the most egregious violations of Robert's Rules of Order. And they're also engaging in personalities is a very egregious rule of against Robert's Rules of Order. So the chair has the authority under Robert's Rules of Order to keep order in the meeting, and it's important for civilized discourse to do so. And nobody should be yelling out as Mr. DiRienzo did. So thank you very much, Chair.
Madam Chair,
since
this is now an open thing to discuss, Madam Chair, I have the floor.
I will call on you. It was not an issue of not paying attention or disagreeing with you. The working this system to create a mute is not responding very quickly, I'm sorry to say. So thank you very much. Okay, I heard Paul. Is this a point of order, or are you wanting to be able
I can make it that, or I can just say that, yes, this is not the LSB. This is a committee, and in committees, you can't actually even discipline people. If you look at Roberts, committees are different from deliberative assemblies. So, reasoning is really the way to try to do it. And I don't know that I'm going to persuade anybody with what I'm saying, but just cutting people off is really against how the committees are supposed to work, especially in Pacifica. And that's what I have.
Absolutely. Thank you, R. Paul. That's absolutely correct.
All right. Okay,
he's absolutely correct. You could be sued for this.
No, Paul, stop.
Yes, you can be. You try to take away democracy. I saw Amy Goodman sue people for less.
Point of order.
Well,
this is trying.
I'm
trying. Thank you.
Don't do things that make yourself open to suits.
Madam Chair.
Hold on, I'm trying.
No, I understand. In light of this descent into chaos, I move that we adjourn.
I move we adjourn as well.
Come on, folks.
So, guys, it needs a vote.
The motion. The chair should ask if there's objection. If there is, we vote.
There is a motion to adjourn after Paul. No, he keeps coming back. I wonder how he does that. And there's a motion to adjourn. So this doesn't need a second, correct?
Correct.
Are people wanting to adjourn?
And it is not debatable.
Right.
I'm not asking for... R. Paul, are you prepared for a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Anytime. I'm always ready for a roll call vote.
Good.
Are we going to a vote?
It looks like it because
Okay. Everybody's
got an opinion, so let's do that.
Okay.
Are we going to ask if there's any objections or no?
Already did, and...
Who objected?
Got a lot of everybody jumping in on what the parliamentary procedure was. So
did anyone object?
Did anybody object?
I object.
Okay. The motion is to adjourn. Please answer up when you hear your name. Paul DiRienzo.
No.
Lyndon Foley.
You bet.
Yes. Kamau Harris.
No.
Christina Huggins.
Yeah.
R. Paul Martin. Pass. Stephen Meeks. Darlene Pagano.
No.
Myla Reason.
Yes.
Minerva Sanders. Minerva Sanders? I'll come back. Susan Young.
Yes.
Okay, going back, me, yes. Stephen Meeks, Darlene Pagano, oh no, you're there. Minerva Sanders. I do not hear Minerva Sanders. The vote is 5-4, 3 against, 0 abstentions.
5-4, 3 against?
Yes.
I'm sorry, could you say
in favor? In favor, Lyndon Foley, Christina Huggins, R. Paul Martin, Myla Reason, Susan Young. Against, Paul DiRienzo, Kamau Harris, Darlene Pagano.
So the motion passes.
Yep.
We are adjourned.
Barely.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
It's not hand grenade.
Good night. Thank you.